Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I didn't get a reminder, so I wasn't sure this was happening.
Yeah, I just was finding that out from a few other people too. It
So
was
we need to
it,
get a process in place for somebody checking to make sure reminders are set up. Somebody's got to be in charge of that.
But I
I will
explored the
work.
RSVP.
And it's nice to have the RSVP. So I found out that the Practice Accelerator one today, instead of having the link to the Google form for the pre-form, it had the old PDF form.
Oh, what's going on? Okay. I will talk to Tony about that.
Yeah. And you know, this whole reminder thing, holy cow. I don't think we should do them. It takes a whole full-time person. Maybe we just, you know, that's why we send out the newsletters. It's like, okay, put them on your calendar.
Right, but there are some calls that don't, like we don't have the Practice Accelerator access in there. But, I agree. Otherwise,
It's on the page. You know what it is? It's on the
on the schedule page.
schedule page.
So what is Scott making for you for dinner?
I don't know, something requiring a blender because he just said, "Oh, can I use the blender now?" I'm like, "No." But I have a blender. We have an extra blender in the laundry room. I said, "Use the one in the laundry room." That's what I always do. Like if you're watching a football game and you don't want to be bothered, I go in the laundry room and use the blender. Men, they don't know how to figure things out.
Are you protective of your toys?
Me? No.
Oh.
Nobody can use them.
Oh.
No. You want to use them to make me food? Go for it.
Hi, Jill.
I taught my kids how to use blenders and stoves and whatever else they needed when they were like my son was 4. He could barely reach the stove. He'd pull a chair over. We were outside one day and I was shocked. We were outside one day. Hi. It's Barb, not
Hey,
Jill.
Jill.
That's
I
it.
don't know why he's doing that. That's my daughter-in-law, but I don't know why it does
Using
that.
her account or something. Zoom is a little crazy sometimes. So my son and we had our neighbors over. His kid was friends with my kid, and he was a little older, like a year, 2 years older. And we're in the house, and all of a sudden we're like, "Where are the boys?" We go in the house. There's Kevin, who's 4, teaching Nick, who's 6, how to make tofu and vegetables in the frying pan.
Whoa.
I'm like, you're not supposed to use the stove unless there's an adult around. And he's in a chair because he can't reach, obviously. Yeah, my kids got to be independent with food real early on. Because, you know, maybe I was a mean mom, but we'd be visiting like the in-laws' house, and Scott's sister would be there, and she has 3 daughters, a little older, well, quite a bit older than ours. Their youngest is like, probably 5 or 6 years old. No, 8 or 9 years older than my oldest. So we'd be visiting there, and all of a sudden, one of the girls who are 12, 13 years old would go, "Mommy, hungry." Like in that whiny voice. And I'd go, "Oh, so what are you going to make yourself for lunch?" "I don't make lunch. Mommy makes lunch." Lordy, lordy. Like, my kids are never going to be like that. My kids are going to go, "Hey, I'm hungry. What's to eat?" "Oh, let's see. Let's make some of this."
That's mine. I mean, there was a time because research was pretty tight that, I mean, I had the menu plan up. Everything was made up and chopped up and ready to go because it was like, this is all we had. And, it's like, you do anything else? That's why I put the menu up. It's like, so they could see this is what all the different things are for. But they certainly learned how, I mean, Chloe, she works on Saturdays. So before she comes home, she has all of her, the ideas of what she wants to make for the week up. So she comes home on Sundays then. So she goes shopping after work on Saturday. She comes home after church on Sunday and she makes up all these dishes and has
Wow.
And yeah, well, she knows anymore. She has to wait for me. It's gonna happen. I'm not the mother I used to be. I'm not saying that's a good thing, but.
Oh, well, it's funny because I was always like that. But now my kid's, you know, 20, almost 25, 24. He comes home from college, excuse me, over the break. And I'm like, oh, what can I make you? You want me to make you something? I can make myself dinner, Mom, you know. Oh, let me make you that special chili that you like. Or let me. So I suddenly turned it around. So that I,
yeah. Yeah.
But then he sends some pictures of the stuff he makes on the phone. I'm like, how come you don't make me that one? You're here. Like asparagus and mushrooms and like all kinds of really cool stuff. Anyway. All right. So it looks like it's just the four of us today. So, you know, we had originally had this call later at 7 o'clock or whatever. I'm like, people want I want Valentine's Day. People. So we moved it earlier. So anyway, we're here. If anybody has questions, comments, anything you want to go over, I'm here for you. I don't know if anybody else is going to come, but we're here.
Joel? Well, I have a couple of things.
Okay.
So, well, the first thing is a win. It's a celebration. I was asked to submit an article for this online magazine called Our Voices. And oh, nice. It just came out today. So I was, that's
exciting.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yay.
What's that magazine called again?
Our Voices.
What kind of magazine is it?
Here, I put the link on my Facebook page, but here, this goes right to the, it's for women. It's to empower women. So I did it. I kind of took, I've known her for a while and she follows my blog. And so she said, you know, can you do something based on these blogs? So I took the one on winter, you know, in terms of Chinese medicine and everything, and just kind of tweaked it. And I mean, the main information is the main, I mean, there's only so much you can, you know, but
so
anyway.
So when is it going to be here? When is it going to be published?
It's published. It's
open. Oh, it's already here. Oh.
Yeah, that's why I.
What's the name of it?
Our Voices Magazine.
No, I'm in the magazine, but when's your article?
Winter, the Season of Stillness. It's towards the bottom.
Ah, here we go. Cool. Excellent. Congratulations. Yay. Did you get to put a link to you in there? Do you get to
put Well, so I put
your bio and.
Yep.
Great. That's awesome. And how often do, how much readership do they have?
This is their flagship, so I don't know. But. You know, I figure all these other article writers know people. And
yeah, and it's always, you know, there's something about, you know, you get up there, but it helps with SEO because you'll, you know, you get indexed by Google and being associated with a bigger thing. And did you send them to an opt-in?
I just sent them to my Facebook, or I sent them to either a Facebook group I have or my website.
Okay, so I'm just going to give everybody a little hint.
Oh,
if
I know.
Get published in anything and you have a bio, you always want to send them to a place where they can get more. Not just send them to your website. Send them to and I have more information or a freebie on this or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I need a few of those. I don't have that. I'm not like you.
You don't have to have a few. I have too many. You need one that leads them to where you want them to go. And for anybody making up, a free entry point, you really want it to go to something that's going to lead them to your services or, you know, to a program that you have or something like that, that they get to.
Well, my website does have that opt-in. It's a 3-part video series, but that's really all I got right now.
You see, here's the thing. I'm just going to say. Mm-hmm. How often do I want to click to somebody's website? Not often. But if it said, download my empowering 3-part video series that gives you this, and it popped up a place. I'm just saying.
No, I think
people are there's a lot of noise these days, even when there wasn't. And so you always want to send them to something that's going to entice them to exchange information with you to get on your list so that you can keep in communication.
Yeah, no, she contacted me over the weekend, so I didn't have much time to put anything together. But if she wants me to, I think you're right. I really should look at doing something more like that.
Or even when you send to your website for more information and to download my free 3-part video series.
Yeah,
I do that a lot in different, like in my bio, it'll say, oh, and to download my, you know, blah, 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 and to download my free hormone hacking elixirs or whatever, click, go to my website, because it doesn't really let you have one link.
Yeah.
Anyway, you are, but this is great. It's great exposure for you. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of fun. So anyway, that was a win. The other question I have has to go to, and I've been doing just a little bit of research, but I find today I've been having a lot of brain foggy type symptoms, which I'm assuming is related to the smoke and all of that. And so, and for those of you who don't know, I had a kind of a house fire yesterday, an electrical fire. And so I mean, it wasn't like the whole house was on fire or anything, but it was still enough that, and breathing in the fumes, especially because it was associated with that insulation. And so I'm just sitting here not feeling very lightheaded at times, actually. And so I'm like, I know that there's stuff out there that has to do, especially with the California fires and that type of thing. But just wondering if you had any input there.
Well, general detox type stuff, general things that are going to pull stuff out. So, you know, increasing your vitamin C, increasing your fluid intake, zeolite, perhaps, taking some zeolite to bind to whatever toxins are, you know, being produced. Even MCP, modified citric pectin, might be helpful to just bind whatever is, you know, going through you. Seaweed, that's, you know,
have, I got seaweed.
Helps. Spirulina, spirulina, chlorella.
I've got both of those.
Even cilantro, because although, you know, we think about that for heavy metal, it's also, it's a chelating agent. And who knows what kind of metals or toxins or whatever, like you said, is insulation burning. It wasn't just wood burning, but insulation, and that material just is known to be toxic.
Toxic.
Yeah. And
then clay, would that?
Clay, you know, clay could work, right?
Okay.
Clay is more of a, you know, it's in the system. It doesn't get systemically.
Yeah, right.
So it's just in the gut. So it will help with things eliminating, but I think we need something that's going to get into your bloodstream and just bind to some of the stuff there.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to Rochester on Saturday to see my grandson play basketball, and they've got a food co-op, they've got Trader Joe's, they've got Whole Foods, they've got, what is this farmer's market thing, Fresh Time? You know, so they have a lot more resources there, so I can probably find some of the other.
What do you have on hand? What kind of herbs do you have? Lymphatic movers, so if you have cleavers or some of the other lymphatic drainage type things, nettles.
I've got nettles. I've got some burdock.
Burdock, yeah. Anything that supports liver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've got some milk thistle tincture.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Up your liver, up your elimination, up your, you know, chelation kind of agents, and of course fluid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Solution, the solution to the pollution is dilution.
Yes, exactly. I say that to a lot of people. And it's really, you know, sometimes so simple as that.
Yeah, and if you're noticing brain.
Yeah, it's just like.
Yeah, you might want to just look at, you know, what kind of stuff supports brain. So, you know, phospholipids, maybe. Mm-hmm. Could be helpful, mm-hmm. You know, some sunflower seeds, sunflower lecithin, something like that. Do you have, yeah, I'm sure you have sunflower seeds.
Well, I've got some, yeah, I've definitely got that. But now that I think about it, I've got this whole concoction of Ayurvedic herbs like bacopa and skullcap.
Oh,
and
bacopa.
Stuff.
That's the one I was just thinking of. Bacopa, skullcap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That would be good. For sure.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, I hope you feel better.
Yeah. Oh, I feel fine. It's just like there's this like even my energy is just like an
Yeah.
And I'm kind of part of it is the adrenaline, because the adrenaline will affect your brain as well. So
Well, and cortisol is the after effect. So your adrenaline
right.
was rushed at that.
And
time.
Then the cortisol
and there's
right.
exhaustion from an adrenaline rush, right? You know. You just push all this resource. You were thinking, you were taking care of it, and then the aftermath,
exactly.
right? And then the cortisol.
Cortisol, yeah, exactly.
Meditate.
Oh yeah. You know. I'm actually doing a mindfulness challenge this week. So, yeah.
Good.
So I think that was even part of why I was able to do it. It's like. You know, you're supposed to do 5 minutes, 5 times a day, just breathing. He's got different meditations and everything, but the main thing is, it's just taking 5 minutes to breathe.
I love 5 minutes, 5 times a day, because it's so doable.
Yeah, she keeps to the five. So oftentimes when you hear breathing, you know, they'll talk about breathing in 4 times and out. Well, she's sticking with five and making it easier. So breathe in 5, hold 5, let out 5. So 5 minutes, 5 times, 5 breaths.
Nice. Nice. That sounds good. Who's leading it?
Yeah.
Anybody I know?
No. She's my alchemy woman. I do work with her on that type of stuff. So
cool.
Although Maura is in there, and I think Tony knows her too. She was actually my very original first VA. And realized that this is where her passion lies. So she stops doing it. Although she still kind of coaches me a little bit on some of the tech pieces. But.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oops. Jill went away.
She's still there. She's still there. She just shut her video off.
Okay. Looks like her barb one went away and she's there as herself.
Oh! Well, the real Jill, please stand up.
The real Jill is here. Yay.
I switched from my phone to my computer. So, and I was trying to get out of the phone one so it wasn't doing the double voice thing.
You know? Okay, got it.
That's what that was. Okay.
I have a question. And this kind of extends from the sleep call yesterday, whenever that was.
Yeah.
So you said that if a person is getting up in the middle of the night, it's really more to go to the bathroom. It's really more that they're waking up most likely because of hormones and then feel like they have to go to the bathroom. Even though if you talk to all of them, they all say, oh no, I woke up and had to go to the bathroom. So isn't it like a combination of,
no, it's a combination, but you really, honestly, when I really probe, I'll say, oh, so you woke up to go to the bath. You woke up because you had to go to the bathroom. How much did you pee? Was it like a super large amount or was it just like, you know, no, it was just, you know, kind of average. Okay. You probably, that didn't wake you up. Your bladder is only going to wake you up if it's like at, you know, distension point where it can't hold. Unless you're pregnant, right? You know, or you have some other things, interstitial cystitis or something else like that going on. But generally speaking, the bladder will wake you up to pee if you know, you're going to lose it if you don't wake up. So I think a lot of times people think that and they actually wake up because they wake up for whatever other reason, maybe a hormonal swing or mm-hmm. cortisol dip or blood sugar drop or something along those lines. And I'm just, this is my speculation. I mean,
right. Yeah. You know, I just have several people that are, you know, they've had this going on for a long time. One of them is a man, you know, and he has,
well, with a man, you're talking prostate. Prostate. Yeah. Right.
But
yeah.
The other one is a woman, and she just wakes up, you know, multiple times a night and to go to the bathroom. And so
I ask her, how often do you go to the bathroom during the day? Because if she's going to the bathroom a lot during the day, then it may be an interstitial cystitis or some sort of bladder irritation. So that's another question for differentiation. Oh, so you're waking up every 3 hours to go to the bathroom at night. How often do you wake up? Do you go to the bathroom during the day? Right. I mean, I can go. I sometimes do go and see me do that. You know, eight or 10 hours during the day without going to the bathroom. And even though I'm drinking, then all of a sudden I'm like, I think I should go to the bathroom, right? So that it's not, I'm not going to wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom unless, like, sometimes, like nights when I'm drinking a lot, like I'll drink a couple of, it's cold, so I'm drinking a couple of quarts of tea or something, or I'm drinking right up till bedtime. Then, you know, I have woken up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, but it's like, oh yeah, I had to go to the bathroom badly. So usually
if she has this interstitial cystitis or, you know, that irritation, what suggestions do you have for her?
Well,
that's what I'm guessing that she has.
Yeah. So food allergies are super, you know, you got to identify all the triggers, right? And then all the general stuff, you know, all the general stuff, the food stuff. Sometimes leaky gut and a leaky bladder would go together. So it's the basement membrane of the bladder that the urine actually can be leaking into the interstitial space and causing that irritation there. So it's not like it's like a bladder infection is oftentimes an irritation on the surface, the lining, because there's bacteria and it's growing and all that. But an interstitial in between cells, there's some urine that will leak in between, and that similar things that would heal leaky gut. And one of the things that was found was glucosamine and chondroitin to help support that structure. Anything collagen forming could be helpful. I'm real excited about those new protein powders that are geared towards collagen support. I can't wait to try the Sun Warrior one when it comes out. But this Glow one, I sent some to my son as well, because he does a lot of sports, he does a lot of weightlifting, and he, you know, tear this or tear that or overstress this. He's trying to lift 350 pounds. And so I said, well, good collagen support, you know, and he's vegan. And so he was like, oh yeah, exciting. And he liked it. He thought it was good. So things like that, there's glucosamine sulfate and glucosamine. Well, maybe I'm just thinking of something else. Anyway, those kind of things are good for structure, right? But anything that's irritating, anything that, you know, of course, off sugar and all the, you know, processed crap.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And sometimes, you know how it's hard to get people to comply, right? So sometimes you go, oh, well, did you know that this is also related to it? Right? You got a guy that has some impotence and you start to talk to him about, oh, did you know that arugula can actually be good for nitric oxide, which is one of the mechanisms that Viagra uses to increase, you know, your stamina there. I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I'll have some arugula, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's always like, I find that, you know, what we do is as much of a psychological game and manipulation game, so to speak, is how do we get these people to really hone in and hit what their big whys are. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Is she concerned that she wakes up that much through the night? Is she tired in the morning?
Yes.
Yeah.
And she's just kind of accepted it because it's just been that way for so long.
Yeah.
Now she's finally changing her diet. I still think she needs to eat more vegetables, but she's getting off sugar and gluten, and that's good. She's been off of that now for a while. So.
Yeah, it's really hard. Yeah. You know, it's interesting that people, what people will go through to avoid having to, like, before they think changing your diet's so severe, but they'll go and they'll have a stent put in, or they'll go and they'll have open heart surgery, or, you know, they'll take antibiotics or steroids with all their crazy side effects because they don't want to change their diet. And that's the piece where, you know, the art of functional medicine and what we do comes in, is that, you know, really learning to deal with the personalities. I find the genetics to be really a big one for people. I go, oh, you're drinking caffeine. Wow, you have this CYP1B1 or, you know, 1B2, 1A1 or 1B2 or whatever. And, oh, did you know that that same enzyme pathway that breaks down the caffeine when you eat it also breaks down estrogens and turns the estrogens to excrete into the safe estrogens. And it breaks down this really dangerous one, which increases your risk of breast cancer. So honestly, every time you drink a cup of coffee, you're diverting your enzyme system down the pathway to be detoxifying caffeine instead of the dangerous estrogens. And because you have this SNP here, it's already compromised, and you're increasing your risk of breast cancer with every cup of coffee. And then they're like, wait, nobody ever told me that. Right. And but it hits them in a place that nobody is saying. It's really crazy and sad how many health professionals are having people drink coffee.
I don't understand this. It really boggles my mind. There has to be an addictive quality that people cling to, the fact that I'm drinking bulletproof coffee every
day. Addictive. Yes, of course
it's addictive. I know, but it's like,
they don't get that it's addictive.
I know, but these are people that in so many other ways are extremely intelligent. And I remember when I went to that ShyCon conference and I got in line and I'm looking, this is bacon. And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, it's bacon. I was just flummoxed. It's like, but it's bacon. It's cured. Obviously, these are people who are extremely disconnected, have absolutely no idea how bacon is made.
And look at all the keto stuff. Like Josh gets on these things and says, join our program and look what you can eat. He has this big burger with bacon on top, but it's on a lettuce leaf because, you know, bread's bad. But I'm like, yeah. And the same thing with the coffee. I go to these health conferences and these folks are like, oh, I can't wait for the break so I can get my bulletproof. Mm-hmm. Like, ooh. Can you go a little bit longer without, I need my bulletproof. Why do you need your bulletproof? Well, I need to get my caffeine fixed to get my energy going. Like, then what's wrong with your body?
Yeah.
Why don't you fix the root cause? Is it your adrenals? Is it your thyroid? Is it your blood sugar? Is it your gut? Is it, let's get to the root cause of this, right? But I ever since this bulletproof thing, he's a really good marketer, by the way. So he donated bulletproof to these conferences. So anyway, but it's sad. And then they're like, oh, well, they have organic wine. It's organic wine. Okay. So it's wine without the pesticide. That's great. Does the lack of pesticides change the fact that alcohol kills brain cells? Does it change the fact that the alcohol puts a strain on the liver? Does it change the fact that alcohol is actually a higher glycemic food than any other sugar because it's immediately converted into sugar? Does it have anything to do with how it affects the liver and the fatty liver syndrome? Like, seriously?
You know, if people actually looked at the history of things like wine, and it was made at one time because the water sucked, you know? You couldn't drink the water.
You couldn't drink it, so you had to ferment it to kill everything.
Right, so they made wine, but the wine is not anywhere near what we call wine these days. There were no sulfates and sulfites. They didn't add sugar and...
Okay, it's organic, right? The organic ones are low sugar, and they don't add sugar, so they don't have sulfates.
Well, some of them do.
Even the organic ones?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Well, there's recently this one called Dry Farm Wine. They sponsor at the Mindshare events. And they'll be like, oh, who wants to have, you know, Mindshare, Dry Farm Wine as an affiliate? I'm like, why would I want to do that? Yeah. I don't want to sell wine to my people.
I mean, I can't even do kombucha, so I'm definitely not going to be doing any type of wine. But it's, you know, the fact is it's just not what.
And it thins, they don't talk about it thins the gut, it thins the endothelium.
Yeah, well, again, if anybody is that drawn to something with that kind of compulsion,
it's
then
addictive.
You know.
They're both addictive.
Yeah.
Alcohol and caffeine are both addictive substances. So I don't like, okay, you have a celebration. You're gonna like ceremonial use of things. That's one thing. But this is like, you know, it's consistent and it's, to me, it has damaging effects on the body.
It
Why
does.
Do it. And anything that's addictive, sugar's addictive. Kale? I've not known of anybody who's addicted to kale, other than it's great and it's good for me and I can eat kale chips a lot. It's the salt on them that is addictive.
Right. And that speaks again to the importance of rotation. You know, so often we meet with clients and they're like, they have the same thing every morning. They have their routine and they make the same thing every day. So it's mindless.
Yeah.
And I was... I have a membership group and we meet Thursday mornings and we were talking today because we were talking about being mindful. And being mindful means that when you wake up in the morning, you have your little toolbox of what you might use for your morning routine. But you ask yourself, do I need this? I started doing this so I have my oil pulling stuff and my all this stuff and I hold it up to me. I do the sway test. Do I need to oil pull today? And I can't tell you how many times it goes back. That's my no. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I've started doing that. And so my self-care becomes more intuitive in what I need, not just because somebody said this is what you should include in your morning routine.
Right.
It's what my body really needs. Yep. And that I think could be very freeing to people to know that, you know, we're talking about the stress and cortisol and everything, to know that they don't have to do all of it. They just have to do what their body needs. Mm-hmm. But you have the tools, you know, it's like, okay, here's my toolbox of things I could use. Same thing with the breakfast, right? You've got everything ready. You got your chia gel and your greens and all this other thing. What do I need today?
Yeah.
You know,
I've had periods where the chia wasn't it for me. Like I should have my chia today, but it's just not calling me. And you need to honor that. There are times too, and this is something people need to learn. I'm supposed to sleep. I'm supposed to exercise, but for whatever reason, you know, had to get to bed late at an event, traveling, whatever, get up in the morning. I have a choice. I either give up sleep to go exercise or I give up exercise to sleep more. And at different times, the answer is going to be different.
Yep.
Times it might be, no, I need the sleep today. And other times it's like, oh, I got to get my body moving today. Right. But tuning in and asking and trusting your inner wisdom is really important. And teaching our clients to trust their inner wisdom is really important.
I'm doing that mind hack with David Baer.
I haven't started it yet. I keep meaning to.
Yeah, I've got mine all printed out. I started it. That's about as far as I've gotten. But I've scanned through it because, honestly, a lot of it is stuff that we are taught here or through Laura Fine. But I like the way he presents it. But he says that a belief is a decision. And so when you wake up in the morning, you have decisions to make that that become your beliefs. And that's so important. What was the other thing? And I know Laura has said this as well. We're not responsible for something. We're responsible to. So I'm responsible to my clients if I said I was going to give them something or respond or whatever, but I'm not responsible for them. They're responsible for how they take the information. And that works for all of us here. We're responsible to them to give them the information that can be helpful to them. Right. We can choose how to do that. We can choose to recognize that this may be too much for them. I'm going to give them this, but they're responsible for doing it.
They're responsible for doing it. And that this is a thing I see in practitioners who are new, but also in practitioners who are seasoned, is we take responsibility for the people. And then we feel bad because they didn't follow through. And then we over deliver and over give to try to make up for our feeling inadequate because they didn't do what we gave them to do. And in some cases, well, maybe there's another way we can phrase it. Maybe there's another way we can explain it, like, oh, related to genetics or related to something else. But in reality, they're responsible for doing it. If somebody says, oh, I can't go gluten-free, your tests show that you have to go gluten-free if you want to be healthy. I am at the point where if I know what this person needs to do and they're in a place where they're unwilling to do it, it's like, I'll say, look, I can help you, but these are the things that are going to help you. And if you're not willing to do them, not I'm not able to do them right now, that's a difference. If you're not able right now, I'm going to support you until we can get you able. But if you're not willing to do it, then you need to find another practitioner because I can't help you. Mm-hmm. But if you're willing, but right now not able, what do we need to do to get you to the point where you're able, right? Do you need more resources? Do you need, you know, whatever they may need to be able? But they need emotional eating support, whatever it might be. But if they're like, no way, I don't believe in it. I don't believe that I need to give up this, this, and this. I just want you to give me some herbs or something to help me with my headaches. I don't want to work with that person. And I used to take people on like that and I'd take responsibility for them and I'd feel like, you know, I was failing and I didn't have some magic bullet that I could pull out. I can't do this. I can't do that. I can't do this, but I still want you to help me get well. I can't, right?
Right.
There is guides for them. We're there to give them guidance. And I want to say hi to Valerie and Martha who just came on.
Oh, Valerie, hi. Yeah, she said she popped down because she's there. You go.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you all?
Well. Are you keeping warm enough?
Yes, I've been outside. I just didn't take my scarf off.
Okay, good.
It feels good around my neck. That's all.
Yeah, I remember that after, you know, when I see people wearing them, I remember when it was really cold and I wore a scarf and I'm like, oh, it kept me so warm and I was shocked.
I know.
And then I forgot that I had that experience.
Yeah. I'm listening to the conversation, shaking my head and agreeing. But I had a neighbor last week who I learned since December had been in and out of the hospital for pneumonia. He stopped drinking alcohol. He thought that would make him feel better, which I'm sure it has. But he has a long list of health challenges, and he's been having panic attacks. So instead of calling the ambulance again, his wife came across the street to get me. So I went over there to investigate, and he's on all of these medicines, asked him some questions, recommended some nutritional changes, and he goes back to the doctor and gets medicine. I said, well, go back to the doctor. Don't come across the street.
Right, exactly.
So that's not something that, I mean, I explain to people that what we do is not a quick fix. We don't do Band-Aids. If you're really wanting to be well, then yes, we can help you. But otherwise, continue as you are. And like you said, Dr. Rita Marie, we will support you until you get to the point, if you get to that point where you really want some changes. So it's about creating space.
Exactly. We need to be able to give them that understanding that when we're looking for root cause and we're trying to help them truly get well, yeah, it can be a slow process. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they may need some medications in the meantime to give them quick relief. but it's like somebody would describe it as on your gas gauge when you have the little needle and it goes down to empty.
Mm-hmm.
You could put a happy face over it so you don't see it.
Yeah.
And then you run the risk you run out of gas, right? That's an obvious one. But that's the same thing people are doing inside when they pop their pills for their headaches or whatever. They're putting a happy face over the empty gas gauge, and then they're just going to run out at a point where it could be very ugly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And being in nursing, seeing that so many times, it's very disheartening to know that if you would just do a little of this, we can prevent this, or give you a little bit more strength or energy or whatever it is. But the mindset is the most challenging thing to get people to understand. That's really where the changes begin, is your mindset.
Totally. And it's the most important if it doesn't happen there. I was sharing with Lynn, I think, the other day, that had a conversation with my sister, one of my sisters, and I hadn't talked to her in a while, and she was telling me how, she found this holistic doctor, and she got off of gluten, mm-hmm. and she's off of all the sugars and the starches, and she's lost weight, and she's feeling good. And I'm thinking, I've been telling her this for 20
years. I know.
She had to suffer, and her ulcerative colitis is all better, right? Yeah.
Yes.
It's very interesting, right? I'm like, I could have saved her a lot of money and a lot of heartache and a lot of pain if she just would have listened to me.
Absolutely. One of my favorite scriptures is that when they talk about Jesus, it says that a prophet is only without honor in his own home. So,
amen.
Family members and relatives are the most challenging to get to hear and to understand. And then when they hear it from someone else, it's like, oh my goodness, the light bulb finally came on. But it's just that when they hear it from us, because they see us as their sibling or their niece or their whatever, and don't see the gift that has been parted in us to help.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And so it was exciting to see. I have another sister who actually has been listening to me recently, and she's doing Sweet Spot, and, you know, she's putting a lot of it in place. She, you know, she's not 100%, but to see this other one go, and I said something about anxiety genes. Oh, she goes, oh, yeah. I said, yeah, I know. I've looked at the genes. She goes, oh, yeah, it's all I know. It's in the family, and addiction genes, and, oh, yeah, we've all got that. So it's like she's finally seeing the light. No, I don't want to go down that path. And
awesome.
It's really cool. But it's mindset, like you said.
And
what would we say earlier? What call was I on earlier when we were talking about how when we trace everything backwards, right? It's really, we talk about gut, we talk about this, but really, what is causing gut issues? What is causing blood sugar issues? Big piece of it is stress. Whether it's food stress or environmental stress or mental emotional stress. And so we can jump in and fix all these organ systems with herbs and nutrients and blah, blah, blah. But if we don't take away the hammer.
Absolutely.
It's just going to keep, you know, it's a temporary Band-Aid solution. Mm-hmm. So it's really, and more people are getting it these days.
Mm-hmm.
More and more. So I see that shift, and it's exciting to see.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Very exciting. Yeah. Cool. Anybody else?
I have several questions.
Oh, good.
And I actually filled out the RSVP form and uploaded some genetic reports.
Okay. We got to get somebody to put the RSVP report, the link to that, on my calendar.
Okay.
Because I always, you know.
You may have not to get actually- it to You may not have to look at these, but my primary question has to do with, I'm working with a fellow on his genetic report, and we had 12 not genotyped and one no call just on the methylation alone, and 10 not genotyped on the detox. And
on the, was that on the genetic genie or on the big report?
Yeah, it's on genetic genie.
Worse.
What?
It's getting worse. 23andMe is getting worse.
Well, I know that some of this has to do with the sample itself, right? There are some people that get a lot of these not genotyped.
Well, not genotyped usually means that they're not doing it. They're not reporting it, but deleted or missing, or what's one of the other, what other terms?
No call.
No call. No call can be the sample itself.
Oh. Well, CYP1A1 was not genotyped.
What?
Well, it's broken down into three parts.
Okay, I'm going to pull it up.
Okay, two of the three are not genotyped.
No, that doesn't make sense. I wonder if... Google Forms. Yeah, see, this is why. It's like, oh, it takes me forever to find it. Okay, NEPT. Yeah, we have to put the link in my calendar.
Oh, okay. I found it if you need it.
Okay, I got it. All right, NEPT case study, NEPT
open
coaching, got it. Yeah, and it's always the same, so it's just, you know, just got to put the link in there to make it easier for me to find it. Okay, so responses, there's only 7 responses. Let's see, Cindy had them.
It's the very last one. Yep.
And I see Martha. Martha has some in there too. So, okay, so responses and individual and... this is from last time. Cindy had like 4 of them. Okay, Martha. Oh, Martha had one today too. Okay, so genetic genie, methylation, and genetic genie detox. All right, so CYP1A1. Okay, so there's 2 out of the 3. So there's 1 that has been.
Right. There's 1 that's there and 2 that aren't.
Okay. And the 1B2. And the 2A6 is not there at all. CY9. Okay. And then the 2D, no 2D6s? Mm-hmm. Most of that's related to drug stuff, the various drugs. 2E2. Yeah. So if I were to look at this, I would compare in the report to what Ben Lynch reports in Stratagene as far as the SNP and the RSID, because they may have decided to drop certain ones that didn't have the, I'm talking 23andMe, that don't have as much research behind them.
Oh, okay.
Like if you look at Ben Lynch's, he only reports on a very a smaller subset.
Right.
He only reports on the ones that have good research. So if we look up, do you have a if you have a Stratagene handy, look up those 1A1s.
I don't have a Stratagene, but I also suggested that he do the genetic detoxification report.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing a lot of not genotyped on that one as well.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're basing it on when they first started to do the report, they based all their software on all the SNPs that they were being reported at the time. So I'm going to pull up a, see where I can find a Stratagene. I'm just going to go into my Google Drive and I'll find a Stratagene.
So there's really nothing I can do about that?
Oh, no. It's a genetic genie thing. I mean, a 23andMe thing.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, we need to see if there's another one that's doing more. But the other thing is, I'm going to look up Stratagene report. Okay. I don't know whose this is, but it just showed up. So I'd rather put mine up, but we'll just skip through. Okay, most people don't even put their real names on these because he tells you not to. All right, so what's the RSID on the one... The oh, he doesn't do any of the CYPs. Never mind. Let me look up the...
Well, you know, on the ones that say not genotyped, it's putting not found under the RSID.
When you search the RSID, where?
On the genetic genie.
Oh, yeah, because it's not found. Right, that's exactly why it's not finding it. Oh, I see what you mean. Oh, that's interesting. Usually they show it because it's just a standard report. If I do this search on this, I'm just going to do a I'm just going to do a Google search on it. We'll do a Snipedia or something on it. Association of Common Variant. 1A, 2C, that was the A. Let me look back here. So there's a 2C, the M3, and then there's the C2. Okay. Yeah, I think when you got, you know, if you were to run any of the reports, you'd get not found. Okay, so the 2C. I just wonder about the difference. This would take a little bit more research, but if you want to, like, really from an intellectual curiosity standpoint, I would look up, like, what is there a difference between these two? Like in terms of clinical research, in terms of what they lead to, or is it the 1A, let me just do this one. Is this just the most common one? And I mean, it's like duplication. Okay, we measured three different variants of it. Maybe at the time when they first started doing it, it was found to be clinically relevant, but now maybe it's not. So this is detoxifying cigarette smoke and estrogen. What does the other one say? Mm-hmm. Leukemia. So this one looks like it has some research on it, the one that's missing, the 2C variant. But it's really, in general, a lot of people just generalize that particular, you know, CYP1A1, that's what I usually say. It's just, in general, it does the heterocyclic amines and estrogen.
But what about the ones where there's nothing showing at all? Like, what was it, the 2D6?
Yeah, the 2D6 is related to a bunch of different drugs. So it's a nice thing to have for people who are on medication. So if we look at, let me go here.
So the reason it's not showing up now is a change at 23andMe?
Change at 23andMe in terms of what they are covering.
Okay. Would it be in the data file?
No.
It's not.
It's not in the raw data file anymore. 23andMe just stopped covering those genes. And these reports were created and their software was made when 23andMe still did it. Okay. There may be some other genetic companies. There's more and more coming out every day. I know that a friend of mine started a company called something IQ, Health IQ or something like that. And they're doing some genetic testing in there. And I'm going to check in with him to see if they're doing some of the ones that 23andMe isn't anymore. It doesn't bother me that they're missing, you know, some of these because they're at least reporting on one of those. But it's the issue is like some of them are not reported at all. Like I think the MAOB was completely missing. Lynn, did you have something to say?
Well, so there's one that I've been keeping my eye on, primarily because it's not even in the United States. And so they're not covered by the FDA or any of these rules. Anyway, so that was one that...
What's the name of it?
Called New Life Genetics.
New Life Genetics?
And it's run by scientists.
And do they give you a raw data file that you can run reports against?
I thought so. Let's see.
Okay. So this is the sheet. So if we look at this genetics detoxification, we look at the sheet. The 2D6 tells us. So you see my explanations are grouped them all together. But it just gives you more of an idea of how off they may be. The 2D6 is related. Which drugs is it related to? There we go. 25% of all prescription drugs. Is that an important one to be reporting on? I think so, right? Tricyclics, MAOIs, SSRIs, opiates, etc.
But you know, that could have a conflict of interest with them being in bed with a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah. to tell people that you don't detoxify these drugs very well. You're right. You're right. Yeah, could very well be.
Okay.
All right. So sorry. I wish I could tell you something different.
Okay. Well, he went ahead and ran the genetic detoxification report, and I've ordered the book. So I will. Yeah. I'll work on that.
I love that combination of the book and the report, because it really helps. You know, the savvier people do it themselves. They look it up and they read about it, right? Our charts that we gave you at Shine are based on that book. And so we did it in a nice, clean way where we put, you know, all the different possibilities across the top and down. So it made it real easy to read, like what you do about these different things.
Right.
But yeah, the book is great to have.
I do want to say, though, that, you know, we took the information that was in the book and then we
verified it. Oh, yeah, we added a lot onto it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We verified it. You know?
We verified and then we expanded.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But it's nice. It's a nice, you know, up till now, people would say, oh, genes, like, how do I do it? Oh, you need somebody to interpret it for you. And now I could at least say to people, well, get the book and read a little bit about it, and then we can talk about it. And they have at least a working knowledge without us having to, like, handhold them through it.
Yeah.
And I love that it gives you off to the side, it'll tell you the pages. So
right.
It just makes life easier.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Now shifting gears completely. Yes. I have two other questions related to business.
Okay.
What is the minimum requirement to, okay, this guy wants to pay me.
Yeah.
And I've never had any payment for my business at all. And I don't have an account or anything that's specifically, I do have a DBA.
That's fine. That's all you need. I will tell you, we only recently, over the last 4 or 5 years, actually got a business account. We were doing it all through a DBA, and it was all done as a Schedule C income, and everything came through to my name.
Okay. So a check can be filled, just made out to me.
Just make it out to you.
Okay, good. And I can use my PayPal that's already in my name?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. And when you do your taxes, you just list it as Schedule C income. But you may not have enough, you know, unless you start charging more people.
I don't think I'll have enough.
But yeah, Schedule C taxes and DBA. Yeah, fine. Just write it out to you. Just give you money.
Do I have to have a tax ID number?
No, that's only, you know, your Social Security number is what you is going to work until you become an LLC, and don't do it right away because you pay a whole lot of money.
Oh, okay.
Once you get steady income. When we converted over to being an LLC, I think it was like 2008 or 9, we ended up getting audited on that year because, you know, we kind of had it half year. And the guy that was our auditor said, wow, he said, you guys should not have become an LLC so soon. You paid us more money than you needed to.
Oh.
Yeah. So don't rush to become an LLC.
Okay. The next step that's going to come up, I think you probably know that I've been working on a case study with Jeannie.
She's my case study. Oh, cool. Yay. Yeah.
She's her TEH.
Right.
Beautiful.
Right. And we're about to come up to our 6th session. And of course, Laura's saying, you need to put a package together. And I am extremely uncomfortable with charging for this.
Okay. Well, first,
I know you're totally surprised that I said that.
No, I'm not. But suppose here's the thing: some people are extremely uncomfortable with getting services for free unless it's in this internship, et cetera, thing. So, you could start with something really simple. Right. So you're going to transition. You go, Jeannie, it's been such a pleasure working with you. I would love to continue. Are you interested in continuing to work with me? Have you found benefit and would you like to continue? Right. She's worked with Laura. She's seen the benefit of you. She knows you're going to be a lot less than Laura to work with her. And one of the reasons she said she didn't decide to continue to work with Laura and pay her, you know, she says right now because they've spent so much, she just, you know, financially couldn't swing it.
Right.
Okay. But if you were to offer her, what would you want? How much would you want to charge her for like a 3-session package?
I have no idea.
Throw a number out, whatever comes to your mind.
Well, I was kind of thinking about maybe 60 to 70-ish.
For 3 sessions?
Per hour.
Session. Okay. Good. Yay. I thought you meant for all 3, and I'm like, okay, let's bump that up. Okay. So per hour, so like 60 to 70 per hour. And then if you do 3, you want to give them a little bit of a break, right? So let's just say you put together a package for 3 sessions for $175. How would you feel about that?
That might be doable.
So also talk to people like Kimberly who offers these. And part of the reason why is because what you charge can have a bearing on the perception people will have for other students to charge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that you're comparing you to anybody else, but when, you know, so Jill might want to charge a certain amount. I might do a certain amount. Kimberly might do a certain amount. Kind of get an idea what other people do. So you see what that ballpark is.
You don't want to be dead below it. Like when Lynn first came into the program and she and I were doing a practice enrollment conversation and we went through this thing and she says, well, I can come to your house and I can, you know, we can do 2 hours and I'll shoot food prep and I'll bring the food. And I said, great, that sounds awesome. I need that. How much? And she said, well, it'll be $50. And I'm thinking, $50? That seems awfully low. And then as I'm sitting there, she says, but if that's too much for you, I could do it for $25. Right? This is Lynn 5 years ago. Okay. Right? So yes. How much would you charge for a package of 3 sessions of the energy work?
Well, I already have one. It's $275.
Yay. Good job.
But there's some complications here for me because this case study has actually been a huge therapeutic. I'm working on my own traumas through this because this is pushing all my buttons and making me face a lot of my own stuff big time.
Yeah.
So if I know that it's one thing if it's free and it's another thing if I start charging, because then the perfectionism, the not enough, the all of that really kicks up.
So even more reason to do it.
Yeah. And here's what you can do too. Like you can say, look, I decided my package rate is going to be $250, $275, whatever. But, you know, because you were so gracious to be my case study, and you'll be my first paying client for this. I'm willing to do it for whatever you feel you could comfortably say and feel good about doing. So always frame it with, this is what I normally would charge for it, but I'm giving you this special deal.
Okay, good thoughts. Thank you. I've got to have this figured out by Monday.
Okay, you can do it. And Jeannie's so sweet. You know, she's an easy one to.
I knew she was going to be the perfect case study for me, and it's turned out that way, and yeah. We're both very happy.
Yay! Yes, I'm so glad that she's doing it.
Yeah. Thank you. That's my questions.
Yep. So just feel confident when you speak it. When you say, you know, hey, this is what it's, you know, this is what I'm thinking. And, you know, but I really want to honor you. And, you know, as my first paying client, I'm going to give you a discount and it'll be whatever you think it should be if you want to do it that way.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Martha, is she talking to me or is she talking to somebody else? Because you're muted. I don't know if she's talking to us or. Yes.
Hello?
Martha?
Yes, I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can. Okay. I didn't know if you were talking to somebody in your room, and I didn't want to open it if you were talking to somebody or if you were trying to talk to us.
Okay. Well, no, I'm all by myself. Just so Jill will feel more comfortable in this, I had done something with somebody in Dr. Fine's class, and they never asked me what I wanted to do at the end. So you have to ask, and it's okay if somebody said no, but I was disappointed that they didn't even try to offer me something.
Thank you. Thank you. Right?
Right. And I didn't feel like I should say, well, you're going to ask me if I want to do business with you. It was like, you just need to practice that and try. And they say, no, I can't do it. Then at least you've gotten through that first hurdle of knowing what it feels like and how you want it to feel like the next time.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's really critical, because we let people down when we don't give them an offer that helps them to take it to the next step. We let them down. So you've had a good rapport with her. You say, Jeannie, this is our last session. I've so appreciated you being, you know, working with me on this, and I feel like you got a lot out of it. Is this something you'd like to continue? Because I'm putting together packages, and I would be happy to work. I would be honored to work with you on a continuing basis.
And just write, make it cute. I'm giving you the family discount now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Always set your list price as to what you really think you should be getting and want to be getting. And then you can discount it. Because you know what? If you get somebody comes in and they're running a, you know, an eight-figure company and they need your help, you don't want to give them the $100 package. They can afford your full price. You can have that sliding scale, which nobody has to know what the sliding scale is. But you, if you don't have that, then, and first of all, second of all, if that person comes in who's like, you know, this high shot, and they're used to paying top dollar for the best stuff ever, they're going to think, oh, she's not worth it because she's too cheap.
And you've been studying a long time, so even if it's your first client, we all have to have a first client at some point that pays. Yeah. So why not do it with a person you already feel comfortable with?
Right. Right.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think it's great. And she just may feel like, that's great. I just got 6 free sessions. I got a lot out of this. I would be happy. What's the fee? And sometimes when you offer a discount like that, you'll say, well, the fee is this much, but you know, because of, they'll say, you know what? You don't have to give me a discount. I'm going to pay your fee. Hmm. I remember having, I was terrible with prices, and I would say my fee is, it's $75 for a half hour session when I was doing chiropractic and acupuncture and massage and all this stuff. And I thought, okay, $75 for a half hour session. And somebody would come in. And, you know, some of them would come in and they'd just like keep, yeah, da, 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 and what about this and what about that? And they'd spend forever. And I just got used to just charging them the $75. So one woman, she came in and I worked on, I did all this stuff. And it was like, we spent an hour and a half. And she said, okay, so, you know, she started writing, how much do I owe you? I said, oh, $75. She goes, what? You told me it was $75 per half hour. I said, yeah. Yeah, she goes, well, we spent an hour and a half, and she wrote me a check for $225. And that happened a few times, right? So don't undervalue yourself. And don't offer the discount. Well, if it's something like this where you want to say, hey, but I'm going to offer it to you for this much. But in general, like, don't do what Lynn did, which, like, as soon as I had that silent, awkward pause, but I could do it for $25 if you want. And I'm thinking, she's going to come to my house and she's going to teach me all the stuff and she's going to bring the food and she's going to charge me $50. Like, that's crazy. But don't be afraid.
And it's okay if they say no too, because you've got to really learn to stand your ground on it.
Yeah. 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 And you have to learn, because if you're doing enrollment conversations, unless you're like the best person, nobody gets 100%. Nobody. right? So you know that if you're doing enrollment conversations and when you're first starting out, if you're good when you're first starting out, maybe you're getting 25% of them to say yes. And then as you get better, maybe 50%. And if you like get top notch, maybe 75% of them, you're still going to have to handle the no on a regular basis. So it is, that's a good point, Martha. It's a really important thing to learn how to handle the no and how to sit with your value in the no and to be able to ask them, like there's ways. And if you watch any of the, you know, the enrollment conversation stuff I have up on the site, if you look at that, it's handling the objections. And Charlotte Jacobs, watch her stuff. She talks about that a lot. She calls it dancing with concerns. Sounds a lot nicer than handling objections. So dancing with concerns. What are their concerns? And when they, if you do this great conversation and you really felt rapport, you made a good offer, it was reasonable, and they say, I don't know, then you can always go back to, okay, I hear you. What I heard you say at the beginning was you really, really wanted to get rid of these headaches. These headaches were getting in your way. They're keeping you from being able to do your job and blah, 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 being with your grandkids. And I've offered you, you know, a path to getting rid of your headaches. And now you're saying, no, you don't think so. So at the time you said it was super important to you. Is it no longer important to you? Yeah, it's important to you. I said, so do you believe that the work that we can do together can help you? That helps them to see, you see, is it that they don't believe that you have a path for them or that really isn't important to them, right? And then you come up with ways each time to work with them. And the Laura Fine work is the perfect thing to use in enrollment conversations because you're listening, you're asking mm-hmm. questions, and you're listening and reflecting things back.
Because what I find, especially with that reflection, when they realize you heard them, and they have all this monkey mind chatter going on in their brain, and sometimes they don't even realize it's exited out the portal of their mouth, and then they hear this said back to them, and they're like, "Oh, did I say that? Do I really think or believe that?" And so it's not about you, it's about them.
That's right.
You know, this is where coming from that heart of service, you know you have something for them and that you can be of help to them. And that's all you're doing. You're showing them, you're reflecting back. I heard you say, this is why we're here. Sometimes what I find is there's that fear that comes up that's like, oh, I might actually get better. And so their hesitation has nothing to do with whether or not you can help them. It doesn't really have anything to do with money. As many times as they'll say, oh, I don't know. It has nothing to do with your money. It has everything to do with the fact that they are afraid because their identity is so interwoven into this presentation of themselves. And here you are saying, here's a way out. They have no idea what it's like to be other than this person living with this dis-ease. And if when you talk to them and you reflect back to them to what they say, you can help them to feel comfortable and let them know that they are in safe and good hands with you, that you won't rush them into anything beyond what they can handle. You might make them a little uncomfortable, but you know, that's where what Charlotte says with the dancing with concerns comes in, because that's what it becomes, that dance as you see that.
This yeah. Yeah. So you have those resources out there. You have the Charlotte recording. You have the Bill Barron. You have mine that I did on the PBSS. And I think one other person actually talked about enrolling. I can't remember who, but everybody has a little bit different approach and you'll learn something. The thing that stood out to me most from Bill was your job is not to convince this person to work with you. Your job is to get this person moved and motivated to the point where they realize that their health is of primary importance and they need to do something. Whether they work with you or somebody else, or they decide that there's a $500, you know, self-study course down the street rather than the $2,000, you know, private thing with you, regardless of what that is. If you've gotten to them to the point where they're moved and motivated that they need to do it or do it on their own. Now, I've had people walk away from strategy sessions, and this is beyond the our fine work, but I've had them walk away from strategy sessions. I'm like, why didn't that person sign up? I thought we had such a great rapport and all this, only to write me back a year later and say, thank you for changing my life. I did this, I did this, I did this, I did this. We had a guy who came to a $25 lecture that I gave. 2-hour lecture, $25. I had books. He bought a book. And his friend who brought him was like, oh, you've got to be able to help my friend. I've been trying for all these years. He's on medicine. I'm afraid he's going to just drop dead of a heart attack. I think he's a heart attack waiting to happen. I'm really concerned about him. And I had some conversation there with him. And he left and he signed up for our mailing list. And about 9 months later, he writes to me. He sends me a picture. And he says, you changed my life. I'm off all my medication. My blood pressure is fine. My cholesterol is fine. I feel great. Thank you. Like he didn't need, not everybody needs that hand holding. A lot of them do. And that's why we're there. But some of them just need the information. And they're going to go do it on their own. Yeah. Not all of them need that. Yeah. Good. You can do this. You can. You will, right? Will you promise us that you will? You're not going to leave her hanging like Martha said.
No, I'm not going to leave her hanging.
Yeah.
And the good thing is I don't really have any emotional attachment to whether or not we continue working together. I mean, I'm really good with where we are. I'm a little nervous if we do continue.
Oh. Having to go deeper? What makes you nervous?
Yeah, I think that's the attachment there.
Yeah, I guess part of me would rather we didn't, because that means I mean, it's taking a lot of energy and it's challenging. It's just really challenging for me. So, I mean, I'm loving what's going on, but it's just very challenging.
Are you doing the healer's prep? Are you doing the healer's prep?
No. Okay. I especially in the session, I'm not comfortable with that. So.
Well, the healer's prep is something you do before it. The healer's prep is where you prepare yourself so you are affected.
Yeah, I have not. I will have to admit I haven't done that.
Well, I would highly recommend it, because the thing that we need to learn to do as practitioners is contain. And, you know, Laura talks right. This is me. That's you. This is me. That's you. That's super important, because the boundaries can start to get blurred, and that whole responsibility for and responsibility to gets all, and then we're taking on their energy. They're taking on our energy, and you're not knowing if the pain you're feeling is yours or theirs. So this is me. That's you. This is me. That's you. And prepare yourself, the breaths, the whole bit, just to go in there and be of service.
Mm.
And not go into their pain, but be with them in finding a way out. And so many people, and they confuse empathy and compassion. And I like to distinguish empathy and compassion. A lot of people think it's the same word, right? Empathy, compassion, it's just a synonym. It's not. Empathy is in the pain with them. Compassion is with them. Empathy is, you're all intertwined and you're going to be a bloody crying basket case along with them and not be able to help them. Oh, I feel so bad for you. Oh, he shouldn't have said that to you. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Versus being with them, seeing their pain, reflecting their pain back, and working together to find a way out. That's what I see the differences. And Laura's work is all about compassion, not empathy. I know she talks about the art of empathy and all that, but in my my definitions to keep it clear in my own mind that empathy is too much where the energies are getting forced together.
I don't really have any problem with that. My issues are, it goes back to my own traumas and nature of needing to be perfect and feeling not good enough. And I start to go into a freeze
when
I don't think I'm doing it right. And that's why I say this has really been pushing my buttons, because I'm forced to going back into the traumatic situations. And as Kimberly puts it, tolerating the situation. And that's the only way to get over it, is to tolerate it, because I've been avoiding uncomfortable situations for so long.
That's right.
But I don't need to bore everybody with that kind of stuff, but that's where my challenges are, is the, you know, and then once I add money on top of that, it just compounds.
Right. Your need to be perfect gets more intense, because now they're paying you.
Right.
And I'm going to just share something with you that you may find surprising, but you're not alone in that feeling. So many of us have been there. I've been there. I still get in that mode. And it's like, when you get in that mode, it's a matter of learning to ask discerning questions of yourself and to be kind and caring to yourself and go, huh, you're like almost like, I don't know if you've ever done this, if Laura teaches this, but the almost like reflecting back to yourself. Like, you know how somebody will say blah, 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 and you go, oh, blah, 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 you know, and then you just kind of guide them through it. So here's what I would do. So say that again to me about the perfection. I go into that perfection, need to be perfect.
Yeah, especially if I start charging for sessions, then my need to be perfect goes up.
So your need to be perfect goes up.
Yeah.
You can reflect that same thing back to yourself. Wow, Valerie, your need to be perfect goes up. Just see what comes up and see if you can process through that need to be perfect. And what happens if you're not perfect?
Well, yeah, I can look at it on the rational emotive side, and I know it's not a valid fear. However, when I'm in the session and I start feeling like I'm messing up, then that's when the limbic system starts taking over and my brain freezes.
Okay. So you have a technique. You probably have a whole bunch more from Laura, but you have a technique that helps you get out of limbic and into prefrontal cortex. What is it?
I've just got to pull them in.
Breathe. You notice it. There goes that voice.
But I am getting practice. I mean, a year ago, I was really uncomfortable even just being on camera on these calls. So
yeah.
I've come a long way.
You have come so far, and I'm going to stop you there. I've come a long way. Sit with that. I've come a long way. I really appreciate how far I've come.
I do appreciate how far I've come.
And I appreciate my inner emotional being allowing for this transition to happen, for the allowing me to feel the discomfort but move through it. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
A lot. Or that child, it's usually a child. Usually that scared inner voice is a child, isn't it?
Right.
Right. So thank you, inner child.
I'm really grateful for all of the synchronicities that have happened in the last few months, because I couldn't have done this otherwise. Lynn is a big part of it.
It's awesome.
So,
and working with her on the groups is, yeah. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I see a big change from last year in her as well.
Yeah.
A lot more open, a lot more giving with your nature. You're a beautiful person inside and out. And I like that you're sharing that more.
Oh, thank you. I'm starting to feel more comfortable. I have a tendency to feel that I don't fit in. So then I start backing out. So that's just... But I've now turned our coaching session into a therapy session.
Well, it's just a small group, and that's the advantage of being able to just really dig, go deep.
It really did help me today that it was a small group. So
yeah. And I'm just gonna, you know, just from a perspective, just between the three, four of us, I'm not good enough is one of my voices. I don't fit in is one of my voices. And it's not like it was a past voice. They still come up. They still come up. And here's the thing. They'll probably never go away. It's how we handle it that makes a difference.
Yeah.
How we handle it. And coming, here's what I found to be the most useful, is when I can just put me aside and say, this isn't about me. This is about you and me being of service to you. I can then not allow that voice to hold me back. Mm-hmm. And when I not allow that voice to hold me back, suddenly I find almost like a channeling, right? I'm getting messages from deep, within, without, wherever, that I can tune in to what might be a good thing to say, when I'm not going, what's the right thing to say now? What's the right thing to say now? What's the right thing to say now? If I just go, I'm here to be of service. And then sometimes things come out of my mouth and I'm like, the heck did that come from? But it was good. Right? So be a channel to allow the wisdom, because it's like all this energy is all out there, right? We're all like, all of our energies are all in this pool, and we can draw on each other's knowledge and wisdom and love and caring, and just come from a place of service. Mm-hmm. I'm here for you. And especially when they've paid you, right? You've paid me to be here, and I'm going to be here with you, 100% of me. And if the voice starts coming up, it's like, later, I don't have time. Nope. Don't have time for that now. We can talk about that later. Right now, I'm focused on Valerie. Does that help at all?
I know that. It's just that switch. If it gets flipped, my brain is just out of there.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you to stop saying that, because you're making it a reality. You're taking an old paradigm and you're imposing it on the present and the future. In the past, when that switch switched, I had no way to get out of it. But every day I'm learning new strategies that make it easier.
Yeah.
Because when we just keep staying, old beliefs, it's a belief system. It's an old limiting belief. And the more words we give to a limiting belief, the more real they stay, and they just keep staying. And your brain is hearing you say it, so it's like going to create the circumstance for you to be right. We don't want you to be wrong, right? What's the circumstance that's going to make you right? And I've got my limiting beliefs that I am working on, and every time I hear myself say it, I'm like, no, I don't, you know, is if I want something done right, I have to do it myself. So what does that mean? That means that I'm going to be looking in every situation for validation of that. Mm-hmm. You didn't do it well enough.
I was right. I should have just done it myself. But letting go of that belief will help me to trust, to get more help, and to, you know, not work so hard. And the same thing with you. Oh, that's a limiting belief that I have, that when I'm in the stress situation, my brain freezes. Mm-hmm. What if my brain could just thaw? Mm-hmm. Right? Just some stuff for thought, because you say, I know that intellectually. And then it's just communicating that to you, the knowing in here, the kinesthetic knowing, the somatic knowing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I know I didn't do any of Laura's stuff and listen and reflect back, but on it, yeah.
You did. You did.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Good.
You know, looking at your background there with the clouds reminds me of something I do when I get into those modes. I look at them as clouds that are, you know, clouds pass along. And here's, oh, look, there's that thought. Okay, you just push it along. Say, okay, when you're not making it, you're not forcing it to leave. You're recognizing, oh, I see you. We'll talk to you later. And you just push it along.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You're not running me anymore.
But you're not pushing it. You're not denying it. You're not saying you're wrong. Nope. You're saying, oh, I see you.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you later.
I'll talk to you later. If you ever make it back this way again, which you probably won't if you're a cloud. Not in the same form anyway. Okay, guys. Exactly. Well, it's Valentine's Day. I'm going to go see what my honey has cooked up for me.
Yeah.
Lucky.
Enjoy.
Thank you. You guys have a great evening. Thank you for being here. It was a great session. I really enjoyed it.
Yes. Thank you for everything. Yeah.
Good
thank
night.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.